Okay, good morning. So this should be our second to last class of Shahr HaGemul, and we're going to try to cover a few topics toward the end. So today we're going to wrap up, we're going to talk about Gan Eden a little bit more, some of the interesting questions that come up. We're going to talk about the story of Shaul HaMelech, how he gave up his life, the idea of one voluntarily giving up their life. That'll come up in just a moment. And then, God willing, next week we will conclude our studies of Shahr HaGemul, where we'll talk about where Rambam believes is the physical location of Gan Eden in this world. And we'll also talk about the machlokes, the dispute between Rambam and Ramban as to their conception of what Olam Haba, what the world to come looks like after the days of the Messiah. So there's going to be a lot of skipping, especially in the last section, just to give us the highlights so we could end on class number 20. Okay, so let me share the screen and we'll go to the Shahr HaGemul so we can wrap up this section. So as we might recall, Ramban was telling us about how the same way people go to Gehenna right after they die, people go to Gan Eden right after they die if they deserve it. So who keeps the Torah? Gan Eden is before them. The Garden of Eden is placed before them. Someone who doesn't guard the Torah, he goes to Gehenna. That's pretty straightforward. And when the righteous ascend up to heaven, they ascend up to the Garden of Eden, and they see the wicked people who are perishing in Gehenna, nafsham smicha, their souls are become happy. They rejoice over seeing the wicked in Gehenna. Now, this is a topic of a shiur that I'm probably going to give around Pesach time, so we won't go into all the sources right now. But there is a little bit of, not a little bit, there's a huge philosophical debate among the Rishonim, among different Jewish thinkers about rejoicing when a wicked person dies. This is a very popular class that every rabbi gave after Osama bin Laden was assassinated by the US Navy SEALs. So you had everyone in the streets rejoicing. So then you had every rabbi and his grandmother was giving a class about this topic of do we rejoice when evil people die, or do we take a more conservative approach, conservative not politically, obviously, but conservative in terms of it being tempered down, that we're not happy about Osama bin Laden dying, but we're happy that a threat was removed from this world and now we are in a safer world now. Those are like the two approaches. So this source over here seems to indicate that we do rejoice when we see the wicked getting their just desserts. However, the Chazon Yoel, let me scroll down over here, the Chazon Yoel commenting on this passage says, "Amnam hemshech lashon ha'medrash hu ba'olam hazeh." That it says that in the rest of that medrash, the medrash says that the righteous are giving thanks to God. Now, what does it mean they're giving thanks to God? Hare she'ein simchasam al ha'yisurin shel ha'rishayim. They're not rejoicing over the wicked perishing. Ella al ha'yisurin shekiblu b'chayehem. Rather, they are rejoicing over the fact that they received their punishment, that the justice that was enacted, that was meted out to them in this world for the few sins that they committed, that way they are purged, they are cleansed, and they could go to the world to come without any limitations, any qualifications, and they could fully enjoy the world to come, the afterlife, without anything holding them back. So they're not actually celebrating over the wicked suffering. They are rather looking at the wicked and saying, "Wow, I could have been in there, but thank you, God, that I received the punishment for my few misdeeds in this world. That way, in the world I'm heading to now, I could only receive divine enjoyment, divine reward." That's the idea. Though, again, this is like a huge topic. One of the, the way, the reason it comes up during Pesach time, does anyone know why this question comes up during Pesach? I'll give you a hint, Az Yashir. Yeah. Did you? So when the wicked, when the Egyptians were crossing the Yamsuf, and then the sea came in on them and killed all of them, the angels began to sing to God. But then God said, how can you celebrate while my creations are perishing? And because of this, I think it's the Beis Yosef who quotes this Medrash. And the Beis Yosef says, we see from here that, and that's the reason why we don't say full Hallel on all those days of Pesach, because we can't have a full celebration at the expense of someone else, even if they were wicked. However, that's not the real reason given in the Gemara. That's a later attributed reason. And there's a lot of sources of people who say otherwise. God willing, this will be a shiur that I will do at some point, one of the Pesach holidays. It's in my docket of things to do. So rest assured, we'll get there one day. Okay. Any questions on that before we go forward? Oh, the one other story that's famous that everyone likes to bring up, by the way, is in Maseches Brachos with Bruria, that Rabbi Meir was being harassed by these hooligans in town. So he prayed for God to bring their demise. But then Bruria, his wife, said to him, why are you praying for their destruction? Pray for them to be chozer b'tshuva. Pray for them to repent and to turn away from their sinful ways. And sure enough, he did, and they repented from their sinful ways. The issue there is that Bruria makes a grammatical error as well. So that's another source that everyone loves to quote during Pesach time. The issue is there's a lot of questions and a lot of nuance in there that people ignore. So you can't just create a pacifist approach to Torah with those two sources alone, because there's a lot of holes in them and qualifications. But again, we'll explore that another time. V'amru, kol mezakis harav inche ba al yado. We also said anyone – oh, no, we did this last time, right? I went the wrong way, I think. There we go. Rash Yisrael Sneakim Acher Hamisa Hu Began Eden. U'bagadosh Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amru Echavi Li Duchtai. So what happened was, you love these stories in Gemara where, rabbis bump into Eliyahu HaNavi, or they bump into the angel of death. So what happened was one day, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi was hanging out with the angel of death. And he said to the angel of death, Echavi Li Duchtai, show me my place in Gan Eden. Show me my place where I will receive my reward. Amar le lechaye, echavi le duchte. And so then what he said, yes, I'll show you. He showed him. And then Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, shiva v'nafal legan Eden. He broke away from the angel of death. He saw it, and he jumped into Gan Eden. He jumped into the Garden of Eden. V'amru chazi le Rabbi Yehoshua bar Yochai. So what happened was he saw his lot in Gan Eden, and he jumped right in. The issue is, wait, isn't that tantamount to suicide? Because he had the rest of his life to live. So it's a very strange idea. But the idea, again, is that when someone dies, if they are righteous, there's no intermediate stage. Rather, he goes straight into Gan Eden. Uberacious Rabba, Mamasa, Diyakim, Ishisros. Okay. So I'm not going to ask if you were there, but on high holidays, this was one of the speeches that I gave. So you might remember the story a little bit if you heard. And if you weren't there for high holidays, well, now you get to hear some of it now. So Bereshis Rabba, the Maisa de Yakim Ish Tsuros ben Achosel Shrabi Yosi ben Yoezer. So the story is that Rabbi Yosi ben Yoezer taught Torah, the Romans caught him, and they were bringing him out to burn him at the stake or to crucify him, whatever they were going to do to him, to put him to death. And then he sees his nephew, who had strayed from the ways of Judaism, riding on a horse on Shabbos. And there's a conversation that's not recorded here, but it's in the Medrash, and Rabbeinu Yonah Pirkei Avos quotes it as well, that Yakim Ish Tsroros, the nephew of Rabbi Yosef ben Yoezer, says, you see, look at you who did keep the Torah, and look at what God has in store for you. And look at me who did not keep the Torah, and look what I have. So he said, look at the horse that is pulling you, and look, I am the one who gets to ride on top of the horse. I am a master of my own destiny, he says to his uncle. But his uncle responds, well, certainly, if this is how God treats those who are faithful to him in this world by having them deserve such a form of execution, imagine what waits for you in the world to come. Allah has kama v'kama. And there's a little more to that dialogue, but what happens is Amru Nisnanam Yosef ben Yoezer Ish Srida. They switch the gears around. So what happened was he took those words to heart. It shook him up, and he decided, oh my gosh, I've been living this sinful life my entire life. I have to do teshuva. I have to repent for my sins. So what it says there is that he performed all arba mitzvos based on himself, all four forms of capital punishment. Now, I don't know how that's possible, by the way, because so you strangulate yourself while you're also, I mean, or hot lead rather, a hot lead for the sreifa. You use a sword. It's a little unclear. It may have just been rhetorical flourish, but he takes his own life because he wanted to do teshuva. Amar l'shaka kamoni zel gan eden. In fact, the end of the story is that Rabbi Yossi ben Yoezer sees his nephew ascend to gan eden before he makes it himself because of that one moment of tshuva. You can see how that plays into the high holidays, I imagine. So the question, though, in the Chazon Yoel is as follows. There is a prohibition for someone to take their own life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, if this guy wanted to do teshuvah for all the sins that he committed, you would think he wouldn't want to add another sin to his tally by then electing to take his own life to show his devotion to God. Because if anything, to take his life consciously, willingly, and we're not talking about someone who, you know, had some sort of psychological condition, God forbid, but he willingly did that, then why would that be helpful for his case if he's trying to do teshuvah? So there's a few approaches to this that comes up. I know it's a little bit of a side topic, but again, it's one of those classes that are sort of on my docket in the future, but not sure if I'll do it, but I'll bring it up here at least since it comes up. So he says as follows, there's really two reasons why someone would be able to do it. One is ein hachinami mutter la'adam laharugis asu mishum teshuva. This idea comes up in Chiddush Rabbi Akiva Eiger, comes up in the Rishonim as well. That why is it that Beis Din gives capital punishment to people who sin? It's not only, you know, when we give capital punishment, let's say to someone who's a murderer. Part of the reason for capital punishment there is to ensure that he doesn't murder other people. But if I break Shabbos, full well knowing I broke Shabbos, I got warned on the spot, I was aware of what I was doing, I said, afal pikin, I'm going to break Shabbos because I don't care about Shabbos, I don't care what you're saying, and there are witnesses there that warn me, then I get put to death. What's the concern there? The reason there's capital punishment is not because, oh, we're afraid this guy's a menace to society by breaking Shabbos. I don't think so. Rather, the idea is that capital punishment serves as a kapara, as an atonement for the sin that he committed. Receiving malchus, lashes, these kind of punishments are not punishments simply to be punitive, simply to deter him from sinning again, but rather it's part of the teshuva process. Part of the teshuva process is suffering on account of the sin committed. We've been talking about all our times learning Shara Gmul together. We've only been talking about God as the one who metes out punishment. But Beis Din also has the power to do that as well. Granted, they have to do it within the confines of halacha, how God ordained it to be. So one answer is that basically instead of Beis Din giving him the punishment, he specifically did all arba mitzvos Beis Din. He inflicted all four death penalties of Beis Din on himself in the efforts of doing teshuva. That's answer number one. The second answer that comes up is less so, it's not really an answer to this question, but it's just part of the broader topic of someone taking their life. So the precedent that we find is actually found in Tanakh. It's found in the story of Shaul HaMelech. Does anyone know how Shaul dies, King Saul?
he kills himself, doesn't he? With he falls on his sword, or
exactly.
Yeah. Yes. He died in battle with his sons.
Right. So he died, exactly, because we had the whole entire prophecy about, right, because beforehand he goes to the witch, and she, machlokas rishon, but shot is, she somehow brings back Shmuel's soul. Shmuel says that you're going to die in this battle, your family will die. And so what happens is, he realizes that the Plishtim, they're going to capture him. So he has his own sword, and he falls on his own sword, thereby taking his own life. And the thing is that Shaul is, you know, he's reprimanded for other things he's done wrong in the past, but there's no indication to Nach that he did anything wrong. In fact, it serves as a precedent of sorts. Now, why was he allowed to take his own life? So one of the approaches is that Shemoto Adam Laharog es Atmo im Ha'akum Yansu Bisurin Lavor al HaTorah Misurishal Yocholam Benisayim. One is he feared torture. So now there's machlokis. It's really a difference between two passages in Tosfos. If the people are going to torture him, we say that it's better to take one's life than to suffer an indeterminate amount of torture. But the thing is, some Rishonim say, and actually that's the wording he used here, if you pick up on the subtlety, he said, "Ima akum yan suhu biyisurin." Lavor al HaTorah, meaning if you know that they are going to force you to sin, that and you won't be able to withstand the suffering, then better to take your own life. But without that factor, what if someone just can be tortured, but not tortured to the point of sinning? Some Rishonim think then you're not allowed to take your own life. So this comes up with the three martyrs from the Nebuchadnezzar. So with the three, they didn't really get martyred in the end of the day, but what happens with them is that we're told in the Gemara that they would have actually given up if they were tortured. So they would have given in. There's a whole discussion over there. Something, again, for another time, but it came up over here, so I just wanted to raise that. Any questions so far? Was this clear? Or is my internet freezing? I think my internet is freezing. One moment. Someone speak if you still hear me.
You're on mute.
Okay, I think we're back now, right?
Yes,
I hear you.
All right, now I'm in my living room where hopefully there's better Wi-Fi. Okay, so my office doesn't have strong Wi-Fi either, so there's really nowhere I could go with good Wi-Fi. All right.
It's the Stanford air, or lack thereof.
I think yeah. It's worse when it's raining.
Oh, okay, maybe that's it. All right, you know, because I have all these Zoom meetings, and for some reason, I guess maybe it's the class I have issues with, because there's Zoom running, and there's a recording running. I don't know what it is. But anyway, was the last section clear? Did we have any questions on that? A little bit of a side topic, but it's a larger sugya. Okay. Shtika Koda, sounds like we're good. Let me just pull this up properly again. Okay. Well, Medrash Rus, V'ruchoso aruchas tamen nasnalo meis hamelech, dvar yom v'yomo kol yimei chayav. So we are told that Yoyachin was always fed by the Babylonian king. So he was fed for all the days of his life. Yimei chayav shalmi, but whose life? Meaning all the days of the Babylonian king while the Babylonian king was still alive, or all the days of the Jewish kings while he was alive. Rav and Levi, some cloakis Rav and Levi. Chad amar yimei chayav shal Yoyachin. One said for all the days of the Jewish king, Yoyachin. V'charam rimei chayav shel Evil Merodach. But I always loved his name, Evil Merodach, because it's, you know, like it's evil, but it's spelled in Hebrew. That's not actually what it means in Hebrew, but, you know, it's like sick calling him evil. So Evil Merodach, all the days of his life. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Mistabra k'man damar rimei chayav shel Yoyachin. It makes sense that Jehoiachin received sustenance from the king of Babylonia for all the days of his life. Why? Once God has granted shalva, has granted respite to the righteous, he will not take it away from them. Rather, once God has granted respite to the righteous, they get to live with that feeling of comfort for all the days of their life until the point that they reach Gan Eden. Now, who is someone that we know in Sefer Bereishis, where we are right now, who wanted to live a life of shalva, but did not get to do that even in his later days? Specifically with the term shalva. Does anyone recall? Okay.
Yaakov?
That's good. Right. That's the Medrash. Good. So we'll see in a moment. Because Yaakov wanted to live a life, wanted to live shalva, but that's when the whole story of Yosef took place, of Yosef being sold into exile, into servitude by his brothers. So the thing over there with Yaakov was that he never actually got to the stage of shalva. But had he reached a stage somehow, he'd be able to live that for the rest of the days of his life. We'll elaborate on what that means in a moment. We'll just finish the Ramban here. Lamana b'mila zos shep tirasa shal tzadik melam hazel legan einin hu. But the point for Ramban's purposes, at least, the implication from this passage is that the righteous go to Gan Eden right after they die, because we are taught that once they die, it says in that passage, they go to Gan Eden. There's no intermediate stage, according to this. So I guess no room for Gilgulim, like we saw before. And then we'll just finish up this paragraph here, this last paragraph in Ramban that we'll do for today, in the end of the section for our purposes. Once Moshe Rabbeinu, he departed to Gan Eden. Amar lo Yeshua, shami meni kol sog sheish lecha. So, sorry, before he, as he was going to Gan Eden, before he went, he said to Yeshua, his student, ask any question that you still have on your mind. Namtsinu lamdin shischara adam la'achar amisim yadhu began Eden. What we learn from here is that someone goes straight to Gan Eden. Now, to Toby's point, the idea of dwelling bishalva. So the question is, let's just go back a second so we get to the beginning of the question. We never find this idea that someone gets to live a whole life of shalva. The moment things are going good, they'll stay good forever. So the question, one question that's really sticks out is that there are times in life that are positive. You know, you have a grandkid, there's a bar mitzvah in the family, but, you know, for all you know, like 2 months down the line, someone in the family could also pass away. And that's just the way the life cycle works. So it's a very odd assumption that the moment someone has shalva, once someone has some form of respite, that means that they get to keep that for the rest of the days of their life. You look out into the world, that's clearly not how God programmed creation. So how do we make sense of this statement by the rabbis? So rather, what do we see here? That the goodness of that all the goodness of this world is specifically given in shalva. There's a special state. Shalva isn't simply just respite, as I've been translating it, but it's some form of tranquility that is ongoing and that is a higher level than just simply things are calm, things are happy right now. We talked about this actually a while ago, like maybe 2 or 3 classes ago, where we said each person is put in this world and they have a mission they are supposed to fulfill to make the world a better place. God gave us an imperfect world with the goal of us perfecting it. And the idea is, and if one fulfills their mission in this world, If I pass all of my tests in this world, if I complete the mission that God set for me in this world, then I'm able to rest in tranquility for the rest of the days of my life. As you can imagine, perhaps most people do not feel the full extent of everything they could accomplish in life. And therefore, even though there's this idea of shalva, it's not something that is really achievable by the vast majority of us. And therefore, and based on this, we could actually explain to understand a medrash about Yaakov Avinu, which Toby cited. Bikish Yaakov leshe b'shalva. We're told that Yaakov, he wanted to dwell in tranquility. And now, what did the rabbis say based on that? L'fikach amru lo dayan l'tzadikim mashim v'tukim l'm l'olam haba. L'shem avakshim leshe b'shalva ma'zeh. Nizdavik lo satno shal Yosef. So what happened? God says, it's not good enough for you that you get to rest in the world to come for all the days of eternity, that you're not satisfied with that, that you even need to take a long-term break. You want to retire in this world. You want to be done with all your work. You think all is said and done. Therefore, God gave him another challenge. He gave him the challenge of Yosef, his son, being taken away from him. And the idea that the message that God was giving Yaakov was that we're put in the world for a limited amount of time. It's true we need time to rest between difficulties, between challenges, between projects, between initiatives that we're doing to improve the community, to improve the lives of those around us. But ultimately, one can't just say, I'm done for good. You know, I've done working in life, so now I'm not going to learn any more Torah. I'm not going to be involved in my community anymore. I don't need to worry. I've worked for this amount of time in my life. I've gone through this challenge, and therefore I could retire for good. I don't mean retire from work. I mean retire from any religious pursuit. But no, that's actually not the message. And, the good thing is you see a lot of people actually, I guess this group is a good example for those who are retired, who take the time to learn Torah, even though they are not working, even though they could be resting. You have in our community and other communities, people take on Daf Yomi. In theory, they could say, I'm done. I'm done working in life. But then they repurpose that extra time to find times to study Torah. So that's a beautiful thing. And that's the message that God was trying to give, that you could take a respite, but to think that you're going to dwell in tranquility and not have to do anything the rest of your life, that's not what God demands from us. We still have a purpose, even if we think we fulfilled that purpose already. There's always another mission to complete. And the message is that shalva, tranquility, true tranquility, is only waiting for us in the world to come. That's when we can actually say, we could put down our shovels, we could put down all of our work and say we are done and we are ready to reap the reward. So long as we are living, we still have a mission to complete. We can still make the world a better place. We still have mitzvos and Torah to learn. And therefore, it was not appropriate for Yaakov to say, you know what? I've been through a lot in life. I'm done now. That's what I think the message he was trying to give. So that's the idea of Shalva. Well,
thank you for the expression, rest in peace.
There you go. Rest in peace. So there's a lot of people these days who get angry when you use that for Jews. I don't know if you saw that. It's more like people in my generation who have more of a secular bent, because I'm not going to get too far into it, but I'll tell you why. They don't like it because today Christianity dominates the American landscape, and so they view Christianity as the oppressors. And because Christians say rest in peace, to say rest in peace about a Jew is like imposing the powers of the majority on the minority who are disenfranchised. And I don't fully understand myself.
I think it's right here.
Yeah, this is the mishigas that we see nowadays. But I 100% agree with you, Toby. That's the idea of resting in peace. I mean, we say it in Kelmale, at the end of a Kelmale, that we say that someone should rest in peace for all eternity. So it's not exclusively a Christian idea.
I didn't think at all.
What was that?
I never would have thought it was a Christian idea.
Yeah, well, the things I see on Facebook nowadays, and not from like crazy, not from like people far out there, like people who are just in my generation who hang out in different circles, shall we say. Okay.
I wonder how many of them think that the way Wolf Blitzer ends his thing every night is a Christian thing, when in fact it's exactly Zichrona Lebracha.
Oh, wait, what are you referring to?
Do you ever watch Wolf Blitzer on CNN?
I've watched CNN, but I don't think him specifically.
Okay, so he does like between like 4 in the afternoon till 7 at night. And he ends his program just before 7 with making memory of some people who've passed during COVID. And he ends it with, and may their memories be for a blessing. He says,
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
But he says that every night, may their memories be for a blessing. And it just sends a shiver down me every time.
Because, right. That's right.
Is he Jewish?
He knows exactly what he's saying.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, he's Jewish.
Yeah. Very.
Definitely Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I so love that he does it.
Wow. We get our own representation right over there.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Okay. So that's the end of this piece. Next time, God willing, we're going to talk about the physical location of Gan Eden in this world, where the Ramban thinks it is. I'll give you, as you can assume, we're not going to get the precise location, because if we did, we either would have found it or we wouldn't have found it by now.
There'd be tours for sure.
Right.
What was that?
There'd be tour groups going there for sure.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that. There's going to be a story about this Greek expedition that went down there and they all got killed. And then somehow the story existed, even though they all died. We're going to talk about that.
Yes, right.
You always love these stories where, and no one was left to tell the tale.
Right. Yeah, they're talking about it.
There's a contradiction there.
Yes.
So that's number one. And then we'll talk about the argument about whether it's our souls or our bodies that exist in the world to come. And then hopefully tonight or tomorrow morning, I will send out which book we will be studying. And I just want to make sure I do this right. You know, the style that you did with Rabbi Zweier was you literally just read through the book together. I mean, I assume I'll read ahead and try to see if there's any material I could find to supplement our reading.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds good. And I assume we could even take turns reading from it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, it's good. English.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sounds good. I'm happy to democratize this a little more.
Great.
All right. Have a great day, everyone.
Yes, you too, Rabbi. Thanks very much. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.